like Pastor Cindy said, for the past 3 weeks, we have been looking at reaching out. We have been looking at these organizations that we are partnering with. And if you didn't know, we have a campaign, a generosity campaign in our church called the Reaching Out Campaign. This is something that we started in the pandemic time, just a couple years ago now, where we dedicate a portion of our offering to give to charity and mission and parachurch organizations. And it's an opportunity for the church to learn to be generous and to help those in need to put Jesus' love into actions. This year, we're supporting these reaching out organizations. We have 10 of them in total, 5 being the charity organizations and 5 of them being Christian missions or parachurch organizations. As of middle of September, September 23rd, in fact, we have received $77,057.34. And we're going to continue to collect these from the congregation until all the way to the end of November. And we're going to begin to distribute these in the coming few months. As part of the Reaching Out campaign, we invited 3 other organizations, like Pastor Cindy said, to partner with us, and they came to our service. The organizations are IJM, you may remember a couple weeks back now, Compassion Canada, and then Breakthrough Missions. We heard their stories and also their mission. We learned from them that they've shared with us how as Christ followers, we must learn to love not just, you know, by talking about it, but being about it. We must also serve the poor and give and share with those that's in need, and that's what God has called us to do. We also heard from them the many needs that they are aiming and trying to address and trying to help in their region, in their concern, their areas of concerns. And you may recall some of those needs that they have shared with us. For example, for organizations like Compassion Canada, whose goal is to help and release children from poverty. If you just do a quick Google search, you're looking at 719 million people in extreme poverty, meaning they make less than $2.15 a day. And Compassion Canada, if you just look at their website, they are spending around $62 million each year in releasing children and youth from poverty. When IJM came, they shared with us that IJM's goal is to save people from slavery, to end slavery altogether. They rescue people from human trafficking, from sex trafficking, from slavery. And when you do a quick search again, you will find that there's at least 50 million people in slavery right now, actually as of a year ago, 2022. And 24.9 million victims of human trafficking. And as of 2021, IJM spends around $10 million each year in alleviating and saving and rescuing people from slavery. We also support organizations like that of UGM and like that of Breakthrough Missions, just locally, missions here in Vancouver. They work with people who struggle with drugs and alcohol dependence, as well as homelessness and poor people in poverty here in Vancouver. Their needs are significantly less, you know, numbers-wise, compared to that of the global need, but it's no less daunting to solve. As of 2020, just a couple years ago, there's at least 3,634 homeless people in Vancouver. Alcohol and drug dependence affect over 20,000 people in BC. Along with our teaching on generosity, we also teach the church to be faithful in offering and supporting the church, because just as there's needs all over the world, there's also needs just right here in this church. Some of you may or may not know this. This evening service is part of a much larger church body. As of the last 2 weeks, we have recorded around 850 people in total attendance of all our services combined. There's approximately 630 people who attend our 2 Cantonese services. There's approximately 150 children and youth altogether. And in this place, there's approximately 70 people attending the evening service. Just give you a little bit of context. Just a year ago, we were at 600, the number. So in 1 year, we have increased by 250 people. The church is growing rapidly, and there are many, many needs that needs to be met. The budget that we set for this year is $1,870,000. If we go zoom even closer in, just talk about this place, talk about the evening service. There is a need in here as well. You see, we are a young congregation. We are a service that has only started, you know, a year and a little bit ago. We are growing. I share with you, you know, we have been counting attendance and we have around 70 people now. And the church really, really values this ministry because we believe that the many young people who is here today is the future of the church. And so we invest a lot of our resources in these ministries. I want to give you some of these figures. We estimate that this year, we're at least putting in $270,000 into this ministry. And this only includes the staff's payroll and the venue rental. If we break this down, that equals to approximately $22,000 each month. I'll give you a little bit more figure. The rental of this place, including the gym that the high school students are going to use in a second, that adds up to approximately $4,000 each month. And if you have a sort of a clear mind, you may be able to sort of guess, okay, or maybe calculate, well, the salary each time is approximately $4,000 to $5,000 a month. And so you add all those together, you have the venue cost, and if you have, say, 4 full-time staffs or 2 full-time staffs working here plus a couple of part-time staffs, you are looking at $22,000 a month. And that's not including the dinner and the snacks and all those other operational expenses that's offered in the services. Because the ministry is young and it's growing, there's a need. I want to give you one more number. Our finance department has been able to provide for us the offering data from 2023, from this congregation, from here. In 2023, we have a total of 14 offering accounts, 14. The total donation that we received from January to August, from the beginning of the year all the way to August, the 8 months, is $29,885. If you divide it by 8, it comes out to around $3,735 a month. And so you quickly do a little A-B comparison from the offering that we're able to receive in the service and also the expenses that come out to this ministry every single month. You will get what I mean when we say we are really investing a lot in this ministry, in the young people here. Now, regardless of whether we're talking about, you know, the millions and millions and the billions of people who are in need all over the world, or we're just talking about the 70 people here, the message is the same, is to be faithful in supporting the church, to be generous to the world, to give to God what God has given you, and to be faithful with God, what God has entrusted you with. And so for some of you, that may mean, as you come to the service or you go to our online version of this, that may mean, you know, putting in whatever your income of the month is, or perhaps your lunch money, or perhaps your pizza money, or perhaps your bubble tea money, or perhaps just, you know, what's here? Some of these. For some of you, this is what it means. And we are fully aware of this, because when we are teaching these things, when we're talking about these things, we are fully aware that probably more than half of your students, more than half of you have low income or just no income altogether. And so we can resonate with some of the thoughts that you have when you put money into these offering boxes online, that is. Because I have been a student once, and I was an art student at best. Now, one other thought that I've always had was just how little I can give, how insignificant these things are. What is so little money for so great a need? What is so little money for so great a need? That's the first thought I always have. You see, what's $100 or what's $25 or $5 or a couple of pennies? What is that going to do to $50 billion of people in need? What's $5 going to do to a $270,000 expenses every single month? It's so little, in fact, that I sometimes think when I was a student that this doesn't even matter. I should just let the big people do it. The rich people do it. The second thought that I've always had was just, well, how little I had. That I felt insufficient, that I didn't feel like I had enough. You see, for the majority of my high school years, I didn't have an income. I didn't have a part-time job like maybe some of you do. Anything that I wanted to buy or anything that I wanted to eat when my parents are not around comes from my hard-earned red pocket money. and the things you would do for red pocket money when you're a CPC. Even later, when I was working a part-time job, I had a couple of expenses. I had to pay rent, I had to pay car insurance, I had to pay my gas, I had to, when I go out with my friends, go with my girlfriend, you know. The margin between my income and my expenses is very tiny, if not just straight up non-existent. I simply didn't have enough. The third thought that I have whenever I thought about giving was so simply no thought. I didn't think about it. Whenever pastors would talk about it, I would think, that's not my problem. Right now, at least. Let somebody else take care of it. I'm too young. That's not my issue. Not my burden to bear. That's their problem. They started the church. I didn't tell them to start the church. I'll think about it when I get older. And for the time being, I'll get somebody else to do this. We understand this. We understand that you may feel insignificant with the little amount that you put in, because I felt that way. Maybe you felt that way. I understand. We understand that you may feel insufficient, as in you didn't have enough, or you may just feel indifferent. That it's not my problem right now. In fact, the reason why I know this is because the disciples are also feeling these things. We're not alone in this. The disciples feel this all the time when they're following Jesus. And there's one very, very apparent incident that I feel like highlights this. The context for this, it was relatively early in Jesus' ministry. He was starting to become a pretty respected leader and a teacher. He just sent out 12 disciples for mission. As they came back after a while, Jesus brought them to a quiet place, you know, silent retreat, just to, you know, rejuvenate, rest up for a little ministry. So they booked the ferry. And they took a little ferry to BC ferry to the nearby retreat center away from the city and was looking forward to the break. Turns out, people from nearby city and towns heard that Jesus was heading to the backcountry for a retreat. So a huge crowd gathered and went to follow him. When Jesus got out of the boat and saw the great crowd, he felt compassion for them and didn't want to turn them away. So he taught them and he healed them and he ministered to all their needs. And it approached late afternoon. The disciples took a break from all the stuff that they were doing. Well, they weren't really doing a lot, actually. They were just sitting around. But they took a break anyway, and they're sitting on the mountain as Jesus continued to minister and teach, you know, just over there. Looking out to the field, there was at least 5,000 people, not counting men, or not counting women, or not counting children. So if you add all those together, safe guess, maybe 20,000 tallish people. 20,000 people in the middle of nowhere. And the disciples were getting anxious. They were getting antsy about this. I imagine Peter would maybe ask Philip, hey, what time is it? Philip would say, 5 p.m.? Don't we usually wrap up the service now and, like, you know, respond song and send them out and, you know, during this time? Yeah, I don't even know if Jesus knows the time. You know, there's a clock there. He never looks at the clock. He always goes over time with the sermon. Philip, did you bring food? Did you bring fruit? Like, you think I can sneak over to the back of the hill over there and just grab an early dinner today? I didn't. I thought you were in charge of food today. Wait, no, Philip. We said that you were from around here, so you would be in charge of food. You know where the good food is. Wait, what about all these people? All these people. Judas, you're on admin. You're on finance. Did you send an email? $5 dinner money, did you send them? Did you tell them to bring, what's that, the container, the reusable container? Judas, no, nobody told me this. Philip is supposed to tell me what food we order and I will calculate the cost and everybody comes in with the money. Philip, where's the food? Is like Uber Eats late or something? Where's the delivery right now? What do you mean, food? We were going on a retreat. Fasting retreat, Jesus says. You're not supposed to bring food. Oh, great. Philip, it's kind of your fault. Why don't you go over, just cue Jesus for the response song, benediction, and send them out and get them out of here before the restaurants close down. And so Philip goes to Jesus. Hey, teacher. You know, we're quite far away from everything else right now. There's no drive-through here. There's no 24 hours McDonald's. The closest food place is an hour walk. Why don't you, like, get to the application part of your sermon, you know, the part where they do stuff. And then like just skip the response. It doesn't matter. We'll just wrap it up. Just give them a good old blessing and then send them out to get food. We can open the service again tomorrow. Jesus looks at Philip. He's not annoyed at all. No worries, Philip. Why don't you go find food for them? Go buy bread somewhere. I can finish while you guys order. You mean buy bread for everyone? Everyone here? Jesus smiled and he nodded. And Philip remembered all the generosity teaching, the giving teaching Jesus teaches all the time, and he pulled Jesus aside. Are you serious? Do you know how many people there are? I thought our dinner rotation was for 13 people. We rotate 13. Matthew did it yesterday. He did 13 people. I have to pay for 20,000 people? Even if I go to Jesus, you know all things. Even if I go to TD right now, you know I don't have enough money for this. I have half a year of savings. I left my job because of you. I'm not going to have enough. You know, even if I take it all, it's not going to be enough. You know who is rich? Matthew. Get Matthew. Matthew's the rich one. Matthew. To which Matthew is like, I'm out of here. Just. And all the disciples are just backing out. Just send them away. Send them, get them out of here. These are familiar statements. You feel insignificant because there is so little money for so great a need. Philip felt that there was not enough, and it's true. He wouldn't have enough if he'd given up the half a year of savings. And so everybody thought, this is not my problem. They came and you got them. Well, actually, you didn't even get them to come here. They just came here to follow you. They can take care of business themselves. But you have been in church for a while, most of you, and you know how this ends. And even if you don't know how this ends, you might have heard of this. Jesus eventually does a miracle, and every single person ate and was full, and there was leftover. Let me ask you a question. This is to test you whether you paid attention in children's service. How did Jesus feed the 5,000 people? Everybody here has to go back to children's class. It was 5 bread and 2 fish, right? Jesus took the 5 bread and 2 fish, blessed them, broke them, distributed them, and there was enough for everybody. Now, this they don't teach in Kabbalah. I don't think they teach in Kabbalah or children's service. Very important. Very important. What type of bread was it? What type of bread was it? Was it pineapple bun? Barbecue bun? Brioche bun? French toast? You learn something new here. It's barley loaf. Barley loaf. Not wheat loaf. What does that mean? You don't know. It's normal. You shouldn't know. What is barley? Barley was cheap. Barley was a cheap ingredient. You know what it was made for? It was made for horse food, livestock food. You know what it was made for? When you turn barley into loaf, into bread, it would have been cheap. It would probably have been pretty bland and unappealing. It's not expensive stuff. Not valuable stuff. Not a big piece of loaf either. It's the food for the commoner. What about the fish? Sockeye salmon. Sashimi. Fresh fish from Steveston. It's not. It's a dried little preserved fish. You know why you need fish? Because the bread is so bland, you need fish to go with it. The bread and the fish is not expensive food. In fact, it would have been the most kind of basic, cheap lunch box you could find out there. Where did the bread and the fish come from? I don't know what it says here. It comes from a boy. More accurately, a lad. Like a little lad, you know, British people? Hey, lad. You know, that little teenager. A boy. Can you imagine this little kid? Everybody was thinking, oh, half a year of wages is not going to do for 20,000 bit. There's a little kid, little boy, going to Jesus, and here's my lunch. If you think about the story, how we have the kid or the child interacting with Jesus or a disciple directly, we have a pretty good guess. This is probably a servant, a pretty poor servant. So how did Jesus feed 5,000 people? It's five cheap barley loaves, two small dried fish, and one little child. They didn't feed, he didn't feed the one little child. He used the little child. I have a question. Why did Jesus do it this way? Think about it. Just think about it. Why did Jesus do it this way? If Jesus wanted to address the needs of everybody in there, why use five cheap pieces of a loaf, two small dried fish, and one little child? And he did this intentionally. Like he didn't, it wasn't something that just came out. We read in the passage that he knows what he's going to do. He knows this is coming. He knows he's going to use this. So why do it this way? I'll ask another question. Another way to ask this. Why not just make the bread yourself? It's going to be much more impressive than using something, isn't it? Like to make a bread out of nothing, that would immediately put your status into God level, to make something out of nothing. Why not Jesus go there and just make something out of nothing? That's God. Right away, everybody would believe. Why not just do that? How about this? Why not pray and rain bread from heaven? You've heard this story. Back in the old days when the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness and had no food, God rained manna, little pieces of bread from heaven to feed the crowd. If Jesus can make it rain bread, heck, rain fish, rain meat, rain dessert, rain bubbles, rain all kinds of food, that's going to show them who's the boss around here. The new Moses is here. Why use five cheap barley loaves, two small dry little pieces of fish, and one little kid to serve and meet such a great need? Throughout the Bible, you will find that this is a very common pattern of God's way of doing things. And I believe there are a couple of reasons you can find throughout the Bible. I'll tell you the first reason. Why did Jesus do this? The first reason is because God delights in people offering things, be it little things. He noticed them. Just when he noticed a poor widow putting in a little penny at the temple. Little penny at the temple. Doesn't do anything. Doesn't really mean much. He praised her for it. He acknowledged her. He saw it. He delights in it. When you put in that 10, that 50, you put it through PayPal, you put it through a credit card, whatever, you skip going out to dinner or you sacrifice your bubble tea because you put it into the offering box, Jesus says, I saw that and I delight in that. It doesn't go unnoticed. Second reason for using the bread and the fish. Second reason, God uses little things to do great things to show his great power. Throughout the Bible, he uses the poor people, the weak people, the lowly people for his work. And look at the disciples, come on. So he can show his glory and power. Half a year of wages, not going to be enough, but it doesn't matter. Little servants' lunch is definitely not going to be enough, but it doesn't matter. Because whether it does anything or not is not dependent on you, it's dependent on the God who turns little things into great things. Five little pieces of bread, two small fish, and one little kid to do great thing. If he can do that, what else can you do with your offering? Third reason, this is the most important one. God doesn't just call people to watch and enjoy miracles. God wants people to be a part of miracles. That's why he used the disciples. That's why he uses the church. That's why he used the little kid's lunch. He didn't call a bunch of people to be miracle watchers, just watch and enjoy. He's calling people to work the miracles. Don't just follow the food, follow him who gives the food and give food to other people. He wants you and I and the church to be involved. That's why he chose to use the little kid's lunch. He didn't call people to be miracle watchers. but to be miracle workers. You see, throughout history, God has been doing this miracle many, many of times. 2,000 years ago, when the church first started, people were giving all they had. And look, 2,000 years later, churches are all over the world. That's because God turns little things into great things. That is our story too, in fact. That's our story. You see, when we first started in 2006, we had 10 adults gathered in a home. A year later, we moved to Richmond Secondary School. And we have 56 people, 56, including children. Our budget at that time was a whopping $130,000 of budget. We wouldn't even buy our own piano. I think this piano came from somebody's house. We wouldn't even buy our own piano. We just lent it. We just grabbed it from someone. Well, not grabbed it. Somebody gave it to us, offered it to us. Our church founders, the pastors that founded the church, they gave whatever they had. They sold their own home. They were both like without pay for a year or a year and a half. Our staff worked at this tiny little office at Continental Plaza. By all human standards, we had very, very, very little. We worry whether we have enough. We wonder whether we should be doing any of this at all. Seventeen years later, what was once an astronomical number is a testimony. It's a testimony. And a reminder of what God's doing in this church and through His people. Because you see, year after year, we would experience God multiplying the loaves that the church gave, multiplying the fish that the church gave. And we here are the ones to experience God's miracle firsthand. You see, in many ways, we are the crowd that received the bread that somebody else offered. We watched the miracle happen. We saw a little lad, a little kid, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 17 years ago, who would give his bread and his fish and say, "This is my lunch. Take it and use it however way you want it." And we are now benefiting from this. It's not just a little story in the Bible. God does this every single time. He calls His people to join in His work. Don't just watch the work, join in the work. And you know, on that hill 2,000 years ago, He asked the disciples, "How many loaves of bread do you have? Go find out." And the questions that the pastors asked themselves in 2006 was the same. How many loaves of bread do we have? Let's take them all out. And the message at that time the pastors gave to each other, gave to the church, was, "You provide the bread, God will provide the miracle, and He will provide for you." Today, our message is the same. As the couple of times we have preached this in the past, every time you come in through these doors, God is calling you, in some sense, to become a little kid again. You don't have to worry whether your portion is big enough. Million and billion dollars of need, you don't have to worry about that. Our God is a God that turns little things to great things. You don't even have to worry whether you're going to have enough afterward. Our God is the God who provides. You will be enriched in every way to be generous in every way. Think about it. Do you think that little kid worried about whether he's going to have food after that? He's not worrying. He's just following Jesus afterwards. You certainly don't need to worry about whether you're too young, you're too small, you're too old, whatever thing you're thinking about. God has called you to do this. God works through the small people, the weak people, the little people, the children, the broken, so that His glory might be shown. Bring the loaf. He brings the miracle. Just as importantly, this is the last thing I'm going to say. God is inviting you to join into something bigger, something more meaningful and more purposeful than yourself, because Watching a miracle happen is cool. Receiving, being on the receiving end of a miracle is cool, but it's a whole other story to be a part of the miracle, to be working it, to be giving the bread, and to be offering the bread. That's a whole other story, to see how God works in the church and work through our, you and my participation. Imagine for that little kid who offered this lunch. It would have changed his life. And it also changed 20,000 people's lives. Not because you have 20,000 people's worth of food, because you have five cheap loaves of bread, barley bread, two little dried fish. But you have one big childlike heart, and you have a really, really, really big God. And He calls you every week to join in the miracle. Let's pray together. Church, I want you to imagine you're sitting on a hill. This hill has green grass and with thousands and thousands of people, and it's late. People are getting hungry. The disciples are walking around looking to see if anyone has food to give. Did anyone bring any bread tonight? You're in the crowd. What's your decision? Giving now. Saying, I have some bread. That's a decision. Or maybe you say, I'll give later. I'll think about it later. That's also a decision. Did anyone bring any bread? Will you be a part of what God's doing? Don't worry about the amount. Don't worry about like how you're going to do it. Don't worry about the logistics. Don't worry about whether it's going to be enough. The invitation for now is, do you want to join into the five loaves of bread, the two fish miracle? Let me give you a minute to decide in your heart right now. Let's pray. In the scripture, it says God loves a cheerful giver, one who's willing to give. So God, teach us to be cheerful, to be willing while we give. Help us and teach us to be generous. Help us to trust you with our finances and give us the passion to be part of what you're doing.